Welcome back to Cargumentative, a show where four men have left the comfort of the studio to talk to you about all things cars and automotive. I'm Thomas Faulkner from the Sunday Times, and as usual, I'm joined by...
Madhav from here. We left the comfort and the warmth of the studio.
Sure, you're out of sequence. Normally Mark sits there.
Weird. Everything's different today.
Mark Salomon.
Mark Paluta. When you say warmth, do you mean... The sauna.
Sauna-like.
But the that's why you like it, huh? Because you can come in,
but
the sit down, sweat, and then feel good afterwards.
If you schwitz a lot, you'll be ripped. You don't even need CrossFit. You'll be like leaving there. You'll have like abs and stuff.
If you schwitz in the studio, it's like going into the sauna.
You must try that next time.
Okay. I'll teach you how to do it. It's a
cool.
Jewish thing.
Okay, lucky. I look forward to it.
Tell them about the, tell them about the Jewish triathlon.
No, I can't.
That's not. Let's try to keep this episode clean so nothing has to be edited out like it was last
week.
We're
in company, guys.
By the way, if anyone listened last week, all the funny bits were edited out.
Yeah.
And we apologize for that.
But they will be on the Christmas edition B-roll podcast.
I like
which
where
is coming out
on
Christmas.
Yeah, well, it's only because you're offensive to people.
Yeah.
To the...
To people.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Moving on. To the news.
It was cut out for a reason.
Okay. Guys, big news. Brad Binder. We know a brand for this.
Huge news.
Massive news.
Even we actually interviewed him.
Yeah.
So Brad announced today on Instagram, as one does, that he's just signed a contract to go into MotoGP next year.
With
KTM.
Which is his existing team. So just explain to us, because Mark's the resident MotoGP guru. So that would be a... What would you call it? Because they're like the
It's the Formula One of MotoGP, but in MotoGP, you call it a satellite team.
Yeah, so you've got satellite team. So you don't have full
factory support. So the factory provides you with, or you buy a bike from the factory, but unlike factory bikes, you don't get development from the factory throughout the season. So you'll have your given bike at the beginning of the season, and that's it. Any development or change has to be done by your mechanics. So you don't have the benefit of, but it's, I suppose it's a way of getting on a factory bike, but without the big contract. And
so it's kind of like a privateer in a way.
It is kind of, well, it's a privateer
like,
team.
Yeah.
He's still a professional rider.
No, for sure. But
yeah, so they call it a satellite team because it's still a professional bike.
Is it a good team?
Tech 3 is very good.
Oh, they're good.
Very good.
They were running Yamahas before, weren't they?
Yeah, they're running Yamaha before. They've run others in the past.
Who's riding for them at the moment?
Oh, shit, I don't even know.
But I think that the important thing is that from Brad's
perspective...
I think
Carl Crutchlow is running a Tech 3, isn't
he? I'm not sure.
No, he's Yamaha.
Tech 3 Yamaha
at the moment. So Tech 3 is going KTM.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
But I think the important thing is that you know, Brad won the Moto 3 World Championship. He went into Moto 2. He had quite a tough first season.
So he won 2017 Moto 3.
Yeah, 2017 Moto 3. We chatted to him at the beginning of this season, which was his second season. Now, he finished third in his first season of Moto 2, and he was hoping to finish really well this year. The regulations changed, and the bikes changed. They all went over to a different frame.
They've got a Triumph motor now.
Yeah.
So he's actually only in the last two races come right. So he had tire issues and he had frame issues, but he came second in the last two races. But he had broken his arm at the end of the Moto 3 season.
Yep.
No, sorry,
testing for Moto 2.
So his first season was terrible. Anyway, it's a huge deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal because it's the first.
There have been two other. South Africans, Cork Ballington is one.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Dave Peterson, I think, featured, but that was before it was called MotoGP. So it was called the 500cc Grand Prix. So when they were still two strides. So in this now Premiership thing, this is big.
So for car people, what this means is effectively a South African is in Formula One.
Exactly.
So you know, it's maybe not one of the top teams. It's not Ferrari or.
It would be like a Red Bull.
But it would be like joining Red Bull, Alfa Romeo, Sauber, or something like that, which is still a huge deal.
It's huge. Sponsorship deals are going to be great for the guy. I mean, he's like now he's onto a good wicket.
Can you imagine how many girls he's going to pull when he comes back and goes drawing with Mike at Fucker Lucker at the end of the year?
I was going to say exactly that. So I was fortunate to have a very very festive evening with him after he won the World Championship in 2017. But I'm looking very forward to a trip overseas so we can go to MotoGP parties now. So, but well done, Brad.
Brad, if you're listening to this, remember us, huh? And remember, Mike owes you a Lamborghini.
And many, many shooters.
True that, actually. True that.
Okay.
So, moving on from Brad, we're going to another B Bloodhound. It's back on the map again.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's coming here.
No, wasn't it back
it's
on?
Back from the brink.
I don't know if it was off.
No, but it's actually coming here. They're saying in October that it'll be here for testing.
So, it's where's it going? To the Northern Cape?
Yeah, so the Bloodhound LSR World Land Speed Record Project looked to have its handbrake permanently on last year when it went into administration. Then it was rescued in a last-minute bid by British businessman Ian Warhurst, who we spoke to at the launch for the project in March this year. So, yeah, he came in, Ian, saved the project, putting some money behind it as well.
Cool.
It's back on track.
Good.
So they're going to be testing. They're doing some high-speed runs in October 2019.
Only 800 k's an hour they're looking to do. So they're testing elements of the car, especially the solid wheels.
Between 640 and 800.
Yeah, they're going to test whether or not how the wheels react to the surface.
Do you remember that they had teams of people go out into the Northern Cape
pick up stones.
To make the surface good enough to run on.
Yeah.
Imagine if that had all been in vain.
Have you guys ever been up there?
No,
it's beautiful.
But we're definitely going to go for the proper attempt.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We'll get press passes.
Yes,
sure, we will. We'll get helicoptered in.
Something tells me if you're going to make all your way there, it's probably not many idiots like us that'll do it. But yeah. I can't wait.
Never say never, huh?
Yep. No, just for the record, they're trying to go 1,600 k's an hour.
So they're doing half of that in the test.
Yeah, and I think that the world land speed record isn't much over 1,000 at the moment.
Well, so
they're
breaking the sound barrier.
Well, they already have.
They have done that.
But not much more than that. So even if they go...
So 1,600 is 1,000 miles an hour.
1,000 miles an hour. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And apparently they're quite worried because if you go over 1,500 k's an hour on the ground, it opens up some kind of portal.
Another dimension.
Yeah, so
like Stranger Things.
Yeah, exactly like that.
Okay.
So that's exciting. Back to reality. The Beetle. It's no more. This week.
The last Beetle rolled off the production.
Yeah, it did indeed.
We're not talking about the original Beetle. We're talking about
the Beetle.
So my mom phoned me all excited. We have to buy a Beetle. I'm like, why? No, because they just made the last one. I'm like, you do know that's the new Beetle.
The new Beetle.
Oh, wah.
But it's like the nameplate. The nameplate's been around for 81 years, and now suddenly it's gone.
How important is been since they stopped making the air-cooled Beetle?
It's just amazing how the Mini really has flourished. I mean, the new Mini is arguably a much bigger success than the original. I mean, it's become like a worldwide phenomenon. Well, and yet the Beetle that came out was terrible. But I was driving around. Yeah, well, it's gone from rear engine to front engine and air-cooled to water-cooled. But I saw something quite cool, which was like the Dune Beetle. Driving around the other day. So it was sort of like a little crossover, Beetle crossover.
Is that a real VW product?
Yeah, and I think that you could like dress that thing up with some rally lamps on the top and maybe like a cool aerial with a big flag on it. It cool.
Well, they actually make quite good secondhand buys. You can pick up a Beetle for not a lot of money.
Especially a convertible.
Well, I wouldn't do the convertible.
What?
No.
I would have thought you would.
You thought wrong.
So a history question here. Was there not a time in history where they'd stopped the production of the old Beetle before they started the new one? Or
no.
It's always
been overlapping. Mexico continued to produce.
So this is the first time in 81 years where there will not be a Beetle?
Yeah. In how many years?
81 years. So Mexico started producing them in 67, I think, or 68. Okay. And then Germany stopped making them, I think, in the 70s.
Are we sure there's no rogue production happening in Mexico still?
No, the last one was in 2003.
Anyway, it's a big thing. We'll miss you.
Yeah.
See you. Okay. Good.
What else is new?
Goodwood.
Goodwood. Come on, we're all waiting.
So Goodwood Festival of Speed happened this past weekend.
Yeah.
Well. And I think I watched it more than I have in the past.
Me too. I didn't leave my house on Saturday.
It's been brilliant. Yeah.
Well, and you could, because there were so many opportunities to watch. So you could either stream it or if you just were ADD like me, waiting for things to happen, you could just go onto the Instagram feed and just keep watching the clips that they were posting. So,
which is very good.
Yeah, absolutely
well done,
brilliant.
Yeah.
Now, you guys went to Goodwood Revival.
Yeah, we did. Have you been there?
I haven't.
That's awkward.
But it's fine. I mean, I've been to Le Mans.
Yeah, but Le Mans is nothing like Goodwood.
No, no, and I've driven a Formula One car. Okay, so the thing is that... No, the question I wanted to just ask was, you guys went to the Revival, which is all the old cars racing wheel to wheel and all that.
Yeah, the old GTOs.
But I think that this thing is interesting in that it's got a very eclectic mix of cars. So you've got everything from 250 GTOs, which there was one there, all the way through to the latest Formula One cars and some very cool old Formula One cars.
And concepts and
the Porsche Taycan, which was the electric car that went up the hill.
Well, yeah, it's now become this launch pad for manufacturers to come out and show new cars that are coming out, unveil new cars, go up the hill, people can see them, get up close to them.
As I said, the Taycan, but there's another one, the Aston Martin DBX, the 4x4, went in its camouflage up the hill.
And the Honda E. Wasn't
your Honda E?
That was really cool.
Yeah, I think that it offers an enormous variety of cars, you know, whereas, you know, Goodwood Revival focuses on only on cars. The only cars allowed in are those that raced in period. Whereas the Festival of Speed celebrates exactly that, speed. And so it doesn't matter how old or how new or concept. Problem with it is that it's a single uphill run and there's a single rally run. Mm. They're not racing wheel to wheel. They're not racing each other. And because it's a straight run, it's difficult to see the cars because they go past you and then up the hill.
They're gone.
So it's not the same as a racing circuit. Yeah. And so that's why in the end I think that for me the Festival of Speed is something to go see, but it will never quite be the Revival.
The Revival is something special.
See, funny enough for me, I mean, I just, you know, just to hear a V10 F1 car go up the hill
for me is phenomenal.
So let's talk about what they do there. So they do kind of parade runs, but they also do timed runs.
A hill climb at the end
actual,
of the year.
An
so
actual hill climb.
Everything goes up.
So the current record, well, the previous record, was held by Nick Heinfeld.
Yeah.
Nick Heinfeld in a Formula One car.
McLaren MP413, I think.
Yeah, which is one of the turbocharged era.
No, like it basic, wasn't turbocharged.
Wasn't it?
It was a V...
It was a V8.
It was when Mercedes was still sponsored by West.
So that was a V10.
That's a 20-year-old car, correct?
Yeah.
And now it's just been broken by VW.
Their
electric ID3.
The IDR.
Is it IDR?
The IDR. Yeah, that thing just beats every record ever.
But Andrew Frankel on Instagram put it in perspective and said, look, they haven't allowed a Formula One car to run there in anger for 20 years.
Hmm.
If you had to take Lewis Hamilton in his current, what did he race for, Mercedes?
Yeah. Don't pretend you don't know.
If you had to take him and run that car now, it would be faster than that.
I'll be honest. I think that car, the electric car, was first of all purpose built and it was set up properly for this run.
Yep.
And they were intending to go out there and set the record. I think that if they set that car up, like Heidfeld's car, properly for the run, it would do. Remember, they wouldn't have gone and changed gear ratios and changed downforce settings and stuff. It was easily going to break the record at the time, so they just sent it up there.
So they say the Formula One car is built to run competitively for like 2 hours, whereas that car is built around competitively for 45 seconds.
Because that's when the battery runs out.
Exactly. Well, no, that's how long the hill climb is.
Sorry, if
you had to build a Formula One car to run competitively for 45 seconds, you could have thousands of horsepower.
And I've just got to say, honestly, it's flipping killing me that an electric car is doing this. It goes against every fiber of my being.
We're running out of time, so we need to choose each of us to conclude this section.
Yeah.
Right? Choose one car that you like the most that you saw in action.
The Dittomasa.
The Dittomasa by miles.
You can't choose the same car.
No, I would.
No,
I would sell my entire collection for that car. Absolutely.
You'd have to sell it about 4 times, but yes.
What?
Shut up.
I'm horrified.
No.
You would even consider one.
Why would you want that?
What are you going to choose?
It looks like a P4. It looks like a P4.
It is gorgeous.
It is the most beautiful.
If you like
we're going to get into an argument.
Hira or Zonda, you will love that.
I didn't see this argument coming. This is a surprise. I never knew how bad your taste was.
But you're a savage, honestly.
Tell us yours.
I didn't.
You've been doing this for a year. You haven't twigged?
Sure. So, I should have guessed, actually. Yeah. I don't know. well, I'm still very excited. I know we've given a lot of airtime, but I'm still very excited about that Lanzante Tag V6 Porsche.
But I wasn't impressed by the sound.
Yeah, but you know, it's got two turbos, and I don't know if it's going to sound.
It sounded like
you're talking about the Tag Porsche. I was disappointed by the sound, but actually, I'm giving it more respect because I found out from Dr. Zandi that the Tag engine was tested in a 930 body back in the late 70s or 80s when it came out, and that's why they've done it. I'm giving it a little bit of respect.
No, I like that, yeah. And to be honest with you, there was a small chance for me when we spoke about it last time that it was going to be vaporware, that it wasn't going to come to fruition.
Oh, yeah.
But here's the first car. It's a working prototype, and it's going up the hill, and I think it's so cool.
So we can add to that the guy sitting in the passenger seat when it did the hill climb is South African. And there's a potential of one coming to South Africa.
We'll leave it at that.
So Thomas, we're not going to name names.
We don't name names.
Yeah, Mark's getting it.
Mm. What I love the most, Thomas, was that Benetton B192. I thought that was the most beautiful car.
That is cool.
That was also Michael Schumacher's.
It was
earlier than that.
It was actually Schumacher's, because Schumacher was what? He was in
I knew
Jordan. He was in Jordan in 91.
Okay.
I don't know.
Anyway, it
could be.
Not sure who
it was that era of 90s Formula One, beautiful, shark-nosed, great livery. It was just that mad my
So much for our 10-minute segment.
We get carried away. Look at me. You were going on about...
You're the boss.
Yeah.
Am I?
You need didn't to they keep have some fancy control. Mazda that you would have liked? Some fancy LMP Mazda, rotary, blah, blah, blah.
I didn't see one.
Dude.
But
I was like, Thomas must be having a crisis.
I've seen it live at Le Mans.
All right, I guess
so. That's it.
All right,
goodbye, guys. We ran out of time for news.
We're not being
and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back shortly.
Young people are making their mark. Get up!
Tune into the Sebenza Live Behind the Hustle podcast every Tuesday to find out more about what fascinating careers are out there. You can find us on the Sowetan Live website,
or you can follow us on Twitter on Sebenza Live.
Sebenza boy.
Sebenza girl.
Sebenza.
Yabamdana.
To advertise on the Cargumentative podcast, simply email us at smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. That's smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za.
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Guys, we're sitting here in this very nice, plush, peaceful car club. Wheels Club, which is somewhere in the middle of Sandton.
Do you think nice is a strong enough word?
No, it's beautiful. It is. And you're surrounded by some really exotic cars.
Exotic people.
Let's call them exotic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we can't really tell you what we're seeing.
No, this is an underground, secret underground lair.
It's exactly like that. It's like one of those Cold War bunkers.
Exactly. You know?
It's a bit like Fast and the Furious, eh?
So we'll talk.
I don't know, I've never seen those films.
Neither have I.
No.
Just amazing.
We'll talk more about what they do here just now.
Yeah.
But for now, we're going to meet someone.
We're going to meet a man. Do you want to introduce
him? No, you introduce him.
That's fine. Okay, cool. Brad Homan from Rocket Auto Care. Thanks for joining us here.
My pleasure.
And you work inside Wheels Club.
That's right, yeah.
And you offer a service where you basically look after cars in terms of paint, cleaning, detailing.
Leather, interiors.
Everything.
Engines, wraps.
Is that right?
Paint protection film.
Paint protection.
So basically, you're like a one-stop paint shop.
Exactly.
Okay.
Nadav, got a question?
Put his hand up.
Yeah, he did.
Shut up.
No, Brad, tell us. So you're in-house here at Wheels Club?
Yeah, we're very fortunate to be included, yeah. So we're part of the Wheels Club family. And then we look after all the cars in storage. You know, we just maintain them, keep them clean, things like that. If they need a bit of work, we do that. And then also we have our clients coming here, which is a very nice facility for them to come to. We got everything. I mean, we got lifts, we got tools, we got everything we need here. Yeah.
So is this broadly detailing? I mean, if you went to classified, is that called detailing?
That's exactly it. So detailing includes a lot of people would think of it as a valet. In the UK, they used to sort of call it a valet.
A valet.
Yeah, valet. So in America, they call it detailing. Yeah. So detailer, I don't know if you ever watched Back to the Future. At the end of Back to the Future
many
2.
Many times, yeah.
So what's that bad guy's name? Buff. What's
Buff, yeah. Buff, yeah.
So Buff.
Buff.
Burf goes and cleans Marty McFly's dad's car, and he's got Burf's detailing on his van or whatever.
Yeah.
So in America, that's sort of detailing. So they've got like these little mobile vans that go wash cars.
Yes.
But in it's a little bit different. And in America, so you got sort of these elite specialists, you know, that we're very good at sort of paints, knowing paints, how to correct paints, how to polish them. You know, with interiors, we can do basically anything on interior.
What is paint correction? I mean, that was what I was really going to ask, because
you hear this term thrown around all the time.
Yeah, you hear it thrown around, and like the question I'm asking is, is there any spraying involved? Like, is there actual taking? Like,
new
let's
paint.
Assume there's. No. Let's assume there's. Are you introducing any new paint to it, or are you just using products to bring like the existing paint to life?
No. So detailers, a lot of people call me. They say my clear coat's busy cracking. Can we do something? Detailers only work with clear coats or 2K paints. We can only work with what we got.
What is
2K? 2K would be without clear coat. It's just usually spray primer, base coat, clear coat. 2K paint has a hardener in it, so it's got no clear coat.
Okay.
In other words, like the older Ferraris, like that Ferrari, the Mondial T is 2K.
Okay.
So we can only work with what we got, but you'll be surprised what you can sort of polish out, you know. Paint's only a couple of hundred micron thick. We got like paint depth gauges that we always sort of read the paint thickness, and that's what we can work with. So we try to get as many defects as you can get out, while still leaving as much paint as possible. Very rare, very old cars, it's not worth chasing 100% paint correction, because you'd rather preserve the original paint. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you respray an old, valuable car, it's a lot more expensive than, you want to preserve the originality, you don't want to have it resprayed.
So I've been lucky enough to have Brad detail 3 of my cars now.
Yeah.
3. And on each of those cars, which were, to me, clean already, he took a day. But you did a Ferrari F40.
That's right, yeah.
How long did that take you?
6 weeks.
That's insane. Is that just because it's a complicated car to work on, or you have to be quite careful the way you approach it? Because it's a Ferrari, and if you look at it for too long, the wheels will fall off.
So it's got that Lexan.
But what was it being prepared for? I mean, was it for a concourse, or was it just because...
So we got a concourse package, so the client opted for that, obviously because of the value of the car. He hardly drives it, but it's in storage. But just the value of the car, he opted for a concourse. It's never been detailed since. It's a 91.
Sure. Okay.
So it's a very scary car to work on. It's straight carbon Kevlar. It was one of the first composite cars, I'm sure you guys know.
Absolutely. And seeing the weave is very, very important.
Yeah.
So I went to Bell Classics, walked up to the F50, the F50 and the Enzo, they said it's very important to be able to see the weave through the paint.
Because there's another one in South Africa where you can't see the weave anymore.
And that's a bad thing.
So that's
been painted with too thick a coat of paint.
Can you reduce the paint through detail?
Well, you wouldn't, because remember, if you're polishing, if you're using an abrasive, it would go flat. It wouldn't keep the texture of the weave. Only the paint being sprayed onto the carbon.
So you can never replicate
it. You can never polish it.
Tell us what you did on the F40. So why does it take 6 weeks?
Well, like I was saying, so that's just a 2K straight onto the carbon Kevlar. There's no primer. There's no clear coat. There's no way to measure the paint thickness because there's no metal.
Oh, yes, because obviously it uses a sonar.
So, exactly. Yeah, okay. So it's very, you can get ones that paint tip gauges that do, but they're extremely expensive.
Okay.
So it's a very scary car to polish, because you can go through the paint without even realizing it.
Sure.
So you've got to really take your time. You've got to be very careful.
Sure.
As our whole purpose was to preserve the originality, but obviously it was very old. It had a lot of scratches. So.
What's that, the plastic glass that they use called?
It's Lexan. Yeah.
Lexan,
very difficult to polish. I've never done another car with it. I imagine if
you use the wrong thing on it, it'll cloud up.
Well, it does. Yeah. Yeah. That's the whole thing. We used our normal sort of Perspex polishes and compounds, and it just clouds it up more. So we had to do a lot of testing, I think.
Yeah. If I could just add another anecdote from I was chatting to the owner of Bell Classics, and he was saying that there were guys who were looking at bicycle frames, carbon fiber bicycle frames, and they wanted to repaint them. And he said to them, just use paint stripper on it. And they said, no, you can't on carbon fiber. And he just said, like, look, I take paint off F40s and F50s with that. Trust me.
It'll work. Okay. Yeah. And it works. Okay.
I thought I would have eaten the raisins.
Yeah. So don't take my word for it, but just phone up Mike Bell from Bell Classics and he'll direct you there. His work is phenomenal.
And then, I wanted to ask a question in terms of cleaning and waxing your own car and polishing. I mean, how often should you do it? And how often should you wax it as opposed to polishing or polishing and waxing? Yeah. I mean, like, you know.
Well, if you use me as an example, my car never gets washed or waxed or anything. It's always dirty. So I'm a bad example. Ideally, ceramic coatings are on the market now. We do a lot of it. It tends to give you a lot more life. The car looks like it's just been waxed for a lot longer. Mm-hmm. But if you're very meticulous about your car, you can wax it every wash.
Mm.
But so ceramic coatings, your sort of natural waxes, your Cornubas, which are part on that Mondial and the Turbo S today, they last a couple of weeks. It's Cornuba comes from a plant. The plant developed the wax to protect itself from sunlight. So it's a natural wax. They mix it with a bit of solvents and oils and whatever, and then you put it on the car. It can wash off with sunlight. So then they started developing synthetic waxes, which had some additives and whatever, some synthetic oils and amino silicones and I don't know what. That you can get sort of months durability. So ceramics, you're talking years. It's a nano product. So
why are the ceramics so like hated by the dealership? Because I've heard that you can lose your motor plan
on
certain cars if you use that.
So Brad did ceramic coating on my white Carrera. I didn't know the first thing about it. He did it for me, and what I can tell you is I hardly clean it. I hardly clean it, and when I do, I hose it down, and the water, it's amazing, that beads together and runs off in beads, so it doesn't stick to the car anymore. Nothing will stick to the car. It's like coating, you know, with a fine?
Yeah, it's like Teflon. Exactly.
And it works like a bomb, right?
Yeah.
I'm so bad at that my car, when it broke down, when the Diablo broke down and it had to be shipped back on the truck, it stayed at my friend's place. He washed it. He said he couldn't bear to see this thing dirty, so before it went off and got towed to the dealership, he washed it.
You're embarrassed.
Messed it up, man. It had great patina.
Spirit is not patina, man.
So just to answer your question, if you meticulously maintain your own car, I've seen clients that we maybe ceramic coated their car 2 years ago and they've taken it to a car wash. It looks terrible because the car wash just scratched it and it's in the coating. I've seen other clients that we actually taught their gardener how to wash the car with the F-top. He had a white F-top. And we redid it. We just topped up the coating about a year and a half later. And it looked like the day we did it. And his gardener was just doing a good job washing it. So as long as you can, if you put ceramic on and you do a good wash, it'll look good for 2-3 years. If you want to keep waxing your car every week, you can, you know. It just depends. But honestly, washing your own car, it's the only way to go. I mean, that's the big difference.
I'm the only person that washes it.
I do. It's good exercise.
Sure. One of the things I'm interested in, because detailing has become really complex these days, and you know, to get, I see that getting behind parts is really important, getting it clean properly. I see a lot of guys, detailing guys, have to dismantle cars, you know, in certain ways, bumpers off, wheels off, things like that. And I've always wondered, where do you gain those skills? How do you learn how to dismantle a car, a modern car, possibly priceless classic? You know, isn't that a stressful part of the job, you know, to start moving things from where they're supposed to be?
Yeah, and screwing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and like you get it back together and there's like three extra bolts.
It's always like that. It's never a good idea. You should get specialists on special cars, you know. I mean, we lifted that 458 today, and I mean, I was on the phone with a Ferrari mechanic. And I found another mechanic as well that I know. He helped us, actually, he lifted one of the cars, yeah. And,
just to discuss where to lift it.
Yeah, jacking points and torque settings on the bolts. I asked him, you know, any sort of special things. The nice thing about detailing, I restored a couple of classics and things like that, and mechanically, I'm not that good. You should honestly get specialists. I mean, it's so easy to strip bolts and break things and whatever. Yeah, and I've seen on some cars that we've detailed, really expensive cars. I mean, some of the bolts are stripped around that you would never think, you know.
Sure.
So,
really?
Yeah. So, yeah. Luckily, we've built sort of a relationship with these guys. So when we did work on a very expensive car, he came in, he lifted it up, stripped it for us, got the parts off, you know, that we had to get to. Wow. So, yeah, detailing's really. I see there's Topaz Detailing that does all of Shmi's cars.
Sorry for mentioning that.
Sorry, everyone.
They started with a new form.
When you said Shmi, did you mean Shmi?
Yeah. Hi, Shmi.
Horrible.
So they started with a sprayable PPF. Yeah. They used to do a lot of PPF installations, so they started with a sprayable one, which is quite interesting because you can change the color.
Yes.
Which is nice.
So yeah. So my understanding is they put a coat of something on the paint and then they spray it on.
Yeah.
Which separates it from the original paint.
No, exactly. So it seems a lot more advanced than like Plastidip. I really don't like Plastidip.
Okay.
So this is a lot more advanced, a lot more thicker, so it can take impact like the way PPF can. Yeah. But it, I see they strip bumpers off. I mean, they're doing like, I can't remember what car they did. There's some process.
No, they've done a lot. I mean, they did a Singer.
Yeah, yeah.
Singer Porsche. Yeah, I've done a lot of stuff.
And they like stripping panels left, right, and center. So,
yeah,
obviously, they've got in-house specialists.
They do, and people trust them. And they also probably have some decent insurance.
Yeah, yeah.
If they do cock up.
But stripping things is never a smart idea, unless the specialized person does it.
Sure.
Well, that answers my question.
We're running out of time. You've got one more question.
I had a question for Mark.
Oh, dear.
All right.
No, don't be funny.
I just want to know.
Page, at this point, I'm going to say Mark. And this means that this can be edited out. Because Nadav is about to get cocky.
No.
Okay?
No. All right. I want to know in general. Okay. If you sort of now PPF your car and you ceramic coat it and you detail it and you paint correct it and it feels smooth to touch, you know, almost milky, is it faster?
Yes, I would say. Is this, if you still
like, so I want to know if a 3.2 is faster, you know.
It is. It feels faster. It's definitely faster than Thomas's SC.
Well, we don't know this for sure because, I mean,
Thomas's square is that Porsches are not the kind of car you should be racing.
But why
you should not drive these cars fast. In his own words, it's a road car. Why would I want to race?
Pointless.
Some people say.
But why hit the table? I keep telling you.
But some people say dirt don't slow you down, right?
Hold on.
Is that true?
But let's go on to a poll. I think this is going to be a nice one. Can we run a poll on the Cogumentative Instagram?
We can try a while. Technically, get it right.
Should Mark and Thomas have a drag race between their two very similar Porsches?
We will do it in a closable road.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very safe. We'll have
rolling start.
Rolling start. So we save Thomas's precious clutch.
Yeah.
And his timing chain tensioners.
Well, those are brand new. So
those are brand new. And we'll see. And Thomas, don't clean your car the day before as well, so we can put this to the test.
So guys, if you're looking for,
you blame the dirt if you lose.
If I'm getting back to the point, if you're looking for good detailing. Brad at Wheels Club. Give me a shout.
What's your Instagram handle?
Rocket Auto Care.
Rocket Auto Care. Do you on Twitter? No.
Facebook, Instagram.
We'll mention him in our feed.
Exactly.
In our feed,
Go check it out. Brad, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you, guys.
And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back shortly.
Cheers.
Man, this aircon is racist.
For the latest political news
and in-depth discussion and analysis
on events making headlines in South Africa's socio-political space,
join myself, Amil Amra, and my comrades from the Sunday Times Politics Desk for our Sunday Times Politics Weekly podcast. You can find new weekly episodes on the Times Live website every Wednesday.
This is not a CFP.
Can you please come in?
To advertise on the Cogumentative podcast, simply email us at smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. That's smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za.
Welcome back to Cogumentative. We're joined by Shelley from Wheels Club. Thank you so much for having us here, and thank you so much for the pizza. I know Mark Palute has really enjoyed it.
I am.
Absolute pleasure.
Lovely pizza.
Absolute
thank
pleasure.
You.
And
Thomas, this is fifth meal.
It's my first meal of the day, because you know, it's really the tenth. So
I'm so pleased I could feed you boys.
Exactly.
Thank you so much. Yeah, Thomas used to love pizza, but then he had an unfortunate pizza incident.
I did, yeah. We'll talk about that another time. We'd like to know more about Wheels Club, if we may.
So let's talk about Shelley's part in this business.
Yeah. What goes down here? Yeah.
So basically, I've just started sales here. It's brand spanking new, so it's really, really a good concept. It's maintaining privacy. It's also sort of like a view by appointment. So I think just sort of adding a little bit of a special touch and making people feel special again when they're buying their asset. You know, I mean, these are special cars. It's something you want to make like really, really exciting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
People need to feel special about parting with their hard-earned cash
100%.
On these special cars, and a boutique kind of environment, which I think you offer here,
that's it.
Is what these like connoisseurs of motor cars are looking for. So Shelley heads up sales.
She does. And what cars do you guys specialize in selling?
Okay, so we're aiming high-end. It's pretty much the sports car and classic vibe. So it's the not sort of run-of-the-mill stuff.
So no Corollas and no Priuses.
No Priuses, no Corollas, guys. Sorry.
More?
No 86s either.
No 86s either.
I think you know. So just Shelley, you've been in this industry for a long time, and I mean you've got a massive amount of passion for it. I mean I'm interested into how you got into this, and on top of that, like I've got to just apologize a little bit because I think I've been tire kicking around you for a lot of the time. So yeah, how did you get into this, into the sales side?
Okay, so I've always liked cars, and I grew up with them. I can still take a sun plug out myself if I have to, which I must tell you, I don't have to. Okay, happy about that.
Good to know you can, though.
And yeah, it's just something that I'm really passionate about, and brilliant. I enjoy the people. So that's why I stuck with it, because the people in the cars are amazing. You meet, I can't explain to you, the variations that come in through your door. It like sort of proves to me every single day that nobody is identical to the next person. And that is part of the excitement. And also your cars. Not one classic is identical to the next classic. And it can be the same bloody thing, let me tell you. And then the buyers that buy them can be complete opposites. So it kind of adds a bit of quirk in its own way. How I got into this, I grew up with them. It was like in my blood.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. I mean, so you've been through the, let's call it the renaissance of the classic car. So I'd say probably about 7 or 8 years ago, it really started gathering momentum. Everyone started talking about it as an asset class as opposed to just a car.
Yeah.
But which is, it's a dynamic that is probably for a separate discussion itself. But have you seen the quality of the cars improve as this has happened? So you're dealing with more exciting cars in better condition, arguably, and as such, different kinds of buyers?
You know what, Mike, you're 100% correct. You land up with guys that are prepared to spend money on what they've bought, and subsequently down the track when they sell, because they've put good quality money into it, they land up fetching a better price. And obviously in parting, it goes to someone that is as perhaps meticulous, and again the cycle starts. So the rollover is, you're buying something with passion, you're looking after it with passion, you're selling it, you're making a profit, and then you can move on to your next project.
So that's important, and that you've been in the industry for a while, and networking is very important, because once you're a car collector, connoisseur, even speculator, you stick with it.
You do.
So on that subject, can you give us a glossary of what you've kind of got in stock at the moment?
Some interesting bits and pieces. On the older side, I've got a very clean 1970 911E, tangerine, so very typical of the period. It is a Sportomatic, which makes it a little bit interesting. If you look overseas, they've picked up quite a bit of momentum price-wise versus the manual gearbox.
Yeah.
Even though they are, I don't know if I could use the word, they're a little bit
quirky.
That's the word I'm looking for. And then I've got a 964 Turbo. I've got a 458 Spider. I mean, so the variety is there.
Quite a bit of variety. Yeah,
and it targets all the different kinds of people. Someone wants to drive something more modern, 360, that might work for you. Someone wants something really classic, 1952 MGTD. If that's your thing, I've got one.
Yeah, sounds like a nice
So I think what's happened, I mean, this is an interesting time now where the market definitely has cooled down a little bit.
Mm.
And I think that if you're in the market for a classic right now, this is really the time to be that you can have what a chalak. And the reason I'm saying is that you've got guys who spent a fortune of money on the cars.
Correct.
And they're not necessarily getting the money for it, but you would get into it at a price that you couldn't do that restoration for.
You're 100% right. Look, at this very point in time, it's called a buyer's market. Okay. It swings in roundabouts because it moves out of a buyer's market back into a seller's market, and that's when everything, the prices are sky high, you cannot negotiate. And, you know, if you want it, you're paying for it.
Yeah.
Right now, it's at a point where the prices are actually right, and they're very attainable to the guys that want to step in and get in.
Yeah.
And you know what? The good part to that is, down the track, it will profit the person that's doing it now. That's what it basically comes down to. So it is. It's revolving. You sit with the highs, you sit with the lows. But if you're passionate about the car, you're going to buy it anyway. So whether you're buying it at the top or the bottom, at the bottom is always nice.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the best place. So car sales is one thing that you guys offer here. What else is there that you offer guys?
Okay, so
with
obviously what makes us that little bit unique is we offer the car sales, we offer storage, and then, as you know, you spoke to Brad.
The storage part is the part we need to talk
about. Yeah, because that's quite a...
And if Justin wants to talk, he can tell us what else. So we've spoken to Brad, detailing. Shelly and
sales,
and
Justin is in charge of the storage.
Yeah, general manager.
Which is how the business started.
It's really storage, because I'm not looking at this as saying that it's only storage. This seems like a lifestyle place.
Yes, but it started out as storage. It started out as purely storage a year ago, so we're a year old. But yes, like anything, we've started expanding, and because storage was never going to make our money.
Yeah.
We were offering, as you say, a lifestyle. So someone could come here and have a boardroom meeting.
So you offer a boardroom facility?
Yes, if you're a member, you can sit, have drinks with your mates, or work in our service offices, if you're a member.
But then on the storage side of it, what do you say? So the cars are charged?
Yes, yeah. So various packages, our baseline package, you'll always get a wash, a car charge, a safe and secure place.
The car is always ready for you to pick it up whenever you want to pick it up.
Yes, your license.
Any time of the day or night.
Your license are checked and renewed by us. So when you come pick up your car, so if your car's in a garage somewhere, okay, you get off a plane, you go to pick up your car, your tires are flat. Your license needs to be renewed.
It's dirty. Yeah.
So you've got to start from square one. Here, you pick up your car, it's sorted.
It's sorted, yeah. Ready to run.
Our top packages has a lot to do with our club and the facility. So you could rent out them, not rent out, it's included in your fee. You could have your birthday on the mezzanine.
So,
for example, a bachelor party.
It depends. I don't know you this well yet, but yeah.
So where we sit in currently is at a...
I'm asking for a friend.
So we're surrounded by some luxury and opulence here. We've got a bar at our disposal. There's coffee machines, some lovely furniture, some offices behind us. And best of all, a view over all the cars.
Yeah, it's just a cool place to hang out.
I mean,
you should do our shows in more often.
That's a nice place, Thomas. We wish. Yeah. Let's see how the sound comes out.
Mm.
Okay. And a view of, nowhere, because we're underground.
No, we're not actually.
Yes, we are.
We've actually got the most beautiful view of the Sandton skyline, actually. So, first of all, because there's a dip here, you can see a lot of trees during the day, and then you can see the skyline.
I thought it was just like wallpaper that was stuck on to give an illusion.
You thought that because you were only looking at the Ferrari Portofino. Couldn't keep your eyes off it.
What is that?
What is that?
We don't know what a Portofino is.
Okay, so look, I mean, if people are interested in contacting you, they can contact you at wheels.club.
Wheels.club, we are by appointment. We're not a walk-in facility. We are open to luxury vehicle owners and,
Sure.
But
you know, we don't want the general public walking in off the street to come walk through these vehicles and scratch your vehicles. So wheels.club and book an appointment.
Sounds good.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks again for having us and hosting us and feeding us.
Not only that, I mean, we're not going to talk about which cars they were, but we got some sounds and
very,
we got
very
to sit
cool
in
sounds.
Some things. So some
eye candy, guys.
Eye candy is lovely. Thank you very much.
That's all we've got time for this week, unfortunately. Yep. But guys, thanks a lot for joining me again and for having us. And tune in next week for another episode of Cargumentative.
Cheers.
Thanks.